I think it's a clear example that, you know, I can see where providing more access, more information is a net positive in the growth of individuals. The future belongs to youth. So the problems that, you know, we are solving right now are going to be the ones that are important to them, whether it is, you know, climate change, sustainability, you know, equity. These are all the things that, the youth will have to contend with in the future. So there is, you know, it is almost inevitable that, you know, they should be exposed to the challenges that we face today. Now, secondly, I think there is the way young people will look at solving these problems is an area where we can get a lot. You know, everyone, you know, people in my cohort and in our cohort is constrained by, you know, the things that we grew up with. You know, you grow up in a certain economy, you grow up in a certain environment, and as we grow older, we are we have maturity, but sometimes we are narrow in thinking. I think giving exposure to youth to solve these problems, coming up with innovative ideas, is a better way.
Places like Schneider, how are you kind of taking that message to the younger people to get them to understand the transition, the need for the transition? Because, you know, depending upon how far back you go into schools, yeah, and universities, these are the people who are you going to be your customers, your partners, your employees,
yeah,
who will either work with you or will actually be the people who resist it.
Yeah. I hope the last one is not the case, the resisting this. So the way we work is we have a number of initiatives, from company, through Schneider Electric Foundation, in various parts of the world that we connect with, whether it is, working with, schools, colleges, or, communities, that require, special assistance. And we work very closely through universities in particular, where we draw lots of, new employees. In France, we have strong partnerships with High Paris, Ecole Polytechnique, where we interact very closely. And we organized very recently a hackathon at MIT, AI focusing on, climate and sustainability, right?
Nice.
A lot of partnerships. And, one of the interesting things that, Prashant, is when we were hiring lots of people, one of the messages was, hey, you can, work in AI, which is, the hottest technology. And by the way, you can apply AI to either, selling more advertisements, in other companies, or you can use it to solve some of the biggest challenges that, we have. I actually think that the biggest impediment for this is not youth, but adults.
In Youth We Trust sits down with successful entrepreneurs, business leaders, educators, and others from around the world. We spotlight how individuals and organizations are shaping a better world, directly or indirectly, for the coming generations through their focus on sustainability, equity, education, and more to empower young people to create the future they deserve. And now, in Youth We Trust.
So good afternoon, Sridhar, and welcome to the podcast in Youth We Trust.
Thank you, Prashant. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm quite excited. And as we were discussing just ahead of our session, you have a very, very interesting mix of talking about, you work with a large company that's focused on energy, that's Schneider Electric. And within that, you're focusing on the impact of AI on energy, and that is marrying technology and sustainability in interesting ways. You are a really accomplished mathematician or statistician, as one can say. So there's a very interesting mix in your background, so interesting. So let me take you straight into and back to when you were younger.
Yeah.
And as I was explaining, the reason I do that is because, Lumi, the runs quests which empower young people to develop solutions to big global problems. And I'm quite curious to see that when I meet business leaders like you, when you were growing up, did you see any problems around you that you really wanted to solve? And then if that's true, what was the problem? And then what did you do about it?
So first of all, this is quite an interesting way for me, you know, also to look back and, think a little bit. So I spent my, all the young formative years in India. And then I moved to US, for my, professional life. So I think if I look back, the first and foremost thing for me was really the emphasis on education. So I grew up in an environment where education was really, the key, for you, for your success. I grew up in a family. My, father was a school teacher, and I was actually surrounded by, lots of, people involved in education in various forms, right? The driver in some sense was really getting some economic security, okay, to be very clear. I mean, as, someone growing up in the 80s, it is economic security is at the forefront in India, and education was really the key to success. I remember myself, going to library, and this was obviously pre-internet and pre, even computers for me, going to the library and poring over Encyclopedia Britannica, so I could learn everything. And it was a, small town that I grew up in. So it was, I think, really the emphasis on education and the passion for learning and all of this as a means for, the economic security, that I would say.
Right. And so therefore, whilst that was your passion, did you see a problem within that, or did you see a problem around you having access to it and others didn't, or something like that?
Yeah. So, clearly access to information, knowledge was quite limited. I mean, in some sense, it was an impediment for many. Things have changed in the last 40 years, from, the basics of having computing, internet to now AI. But I think the constant factor there was staying up to date and being able to learn. I think, that kind of access was key. And I feel fortunate, but, it was not an easy thing, especially if you grow up in like rural places in India.
Did you see disparity around people not having that level of access that even you had?
100%, especially given, the time period where, just take a simple case. If you wanted to have a book, there's probably just one copy of the book in library. And if someone borrowed, then you had to wait until you could get, your hands on it. Or even getting access to textbooks, they are a significant, part of family's budget. So not everyone could afford that. Or even, having the current reading material, like newspapers, magazines that would keep you in tune with the happenings, because this was also, early stages of TV, it was not as prevalent. So there is, there was certainly lots of, hindrances for people who didn't have access to that, I could see the impact that it has on the opportunity that people had later in their lives.
That's absolutely true. And there's a very interesting parallel I'm drawing to my own life. We were so myopic in a way. I don't know if you would agree. We are actually not able to see that there is an entire world around us, I genuinely did not see, of people in poverty who don't have, forget library, forget a school. They have no way of getting any education. I didn't notice people who had no access.
It was certainly myopic. It was certainly limited in, what you could know. And even the timeliness of it, right? You heard that there are things happening elsewhere, but it almost felt like, they are on a different planet. So they didn't impact you as much.
So when you look at your own children today. You're a proud father of two daughters.
Yeah.
You know, one is already getting into university, another is in high school. So if you compare how you grew up and how your daughters have grown up in the US, do you see it as, you know, particularly as, you know, with the advent of AI, et cetera, do you see this as a net positive or now it's becoming a net negative? The level of exposure and the resources and, that they have.
I think it's a net positive. I'm generally an optimist, you know, on, you know, things related to both information technology. I mean, look, we can I'll go back and say how social media has, destroyed the, the family, or you can say that what kind of problems it created in you, which are all true. And, there is no denying about that. But the kind of access that everything that I see in my children that they have been able to, get access to. And quite frankly, I am surprised at the depth of reading at their age, the topics that, they can articulate well compared to my abilities at that age. So I'm both happy and proud, to see that. What access to things can, how access to things can impact. I think it's a clear example that, I can see where providing more access, more information is a net positive in the growth of individuals.
Yeah. So against that backdrop, I recently read a statistic that 70% of young people under 18 are suffering from climate anxiety. There's a digital divide that's happening, right? So the question I have for you is, from your vantage point as a parent and as a professional, do you see the access to information now means that we have to really involve these people in some of these problems? Or do you think that, education in itself is enough and involving people in solving problems that people like you and I should be solving, sustainability, mm-hmm. impact of technology is only going to distract these young people?
And this, kind of going back to the discussion we had before the recording, I think there are a few things to consider. Number one, the future belongs to youth. So the problems that we are solving right now are going to be the ones that are important to them, whether it is climate change, sustainability, equity. These are all the things that the youth will have to contend with in future. So there is, it is almost inevitable that they should be exposed to the challenges that we face today. Now, secondly, I think there is the way young people will look at solving these problems is. It is an area where we can get a lot. Everyone, people in my cohort and in our cohort is constrained by, the things that we grew up with. You grow up in a certain economy, you grow up in a certain environment, and as we grow older, we have maturity, but sometimes we are narrow in thinking. I think giving exposure to youth to solve these problems, coming up with, innovative ideas is a better way to contend these problems, not only because they are the ones that they have who have to deal with this, but they're probably, I think, better suited to solve the problems.
Why do you say so?
So, if I had the experience of judging at several science fairs, STEM competitions, in school, as well as being able to talk to kids in the, particularly in the high school area. Now, I think there is a quantum leap they make connecting dots from different, domains, to come up with something. And also a sense of ownership they feel, for these kinds of, issues. Not all solutions are economically feasible. That's where, adults, come into picture. But I think the unconstrainedness as well as the ability to connect things are really key to come up with innovative solutions.
Yeah, I understand. I think, so let's let's move on to the present. Now, we talked about the problems that the world is facing briefly. We've talked about the fact that, you know, you young people can and should play a role in actually addressing them. But they're very large problems. So talk to me about, you know, what in your life are you doing on sustainability and AI or some combination of that to impact the lives of these future generations?
So, you know, it's a topic that is so much entrenched in my day-to-day, you know, professional life that sometimes it takes me kind of a moment to step back and, you know, look at it because it's, you know, kind of part and parcel. So today we are faced with, you know, several challenges, particularly on the, you know, climate and energy side. We know that we have, you know, the population is going to grow. And the economic prosperity is strongly correlated with the, you know, energy consumption. Energy is at the heart of everything that we do. Okay, and we know that we have to move away from the fossil fuels, you know, to renewable energy resources at scale and in a very rapid amount of time. And you know, companies have net zero goals. You know, there are large transformations underway. So the way I see is, in order to achieve all of this, we need to embrace the technological advances that are, you know, currently underway. And, you know, in my professional capacity, the way I see is AI plays a significant role. So this is where, you know, if you take a large commercial building or a school district, you know, that has to, you know, heat during winter, cool during summer, there are multiple things that it is not, these are not the decisions that humans can make very easily. You know, when do I draw energy from my, you know, PV, you know, photovoltaic cells, or when do I get from grid? Should I store the energy? These are all complex decisions. And AI can automate these things so that you are maintaining the same level of quality and comfort that you need at a much lesser amount of energy, which ultimately contributes to a dramatic reduction in the overall energy consumption. I'll point you to, you know, some of the statistics. There's an excellent book called Electrify, okay? And, you know, where the author talks about, you know, what it means in a hypothetical scenario, everything that we do is magically converted to electricity. And our energy consumption itself would come down by 40% if you were to do that. Because we spend so much energy just to get the energy produced, you know, whether it is coal or oil, we spend significant amount of energy in, you know, extracting.
And you are one organization, one individual who is doing that. But if I step back, you know, and look at the overall picture of where we are going, do you think we are doing enough to kind of transition to sustainable energy or not?
I think globally, I would say that we are really at an early stage, because there is, you know, transitions like this are really hard, right? I mean, you know, you have, you know, both entrenched, you know, there are incumbents, you know, who want to maintain a certain amount of status quo. And you have seen, for example, very recent backlash in US against EVs. You know, 2 years ago, we had, you know, huge forecast of, you know, how electric vehicles are going to be a significant part of it. And, you know, it's only a couple of weeks ago, the reports came out that, well, the demand may not be as high as we expected. The costs are high, you know, without incentives, etc. I think, you know, to me, these are problems, you know, that will have to be solved. The trajectory is clear, right? I mean, we have to transform. I think where we see issues are in people trying to find, you know, in the argument that when we go to the new energy landscape, you know, it's going to be more costly, it's going to be impacting jobs right now. Look, it is inevitable that every transition comes with, you know, certain challenges. No transition is going to be completely, you know, painless. And we have seen this happen across technological changes, you know, in the last century and a half that we kept records of. You know, agriculture was, you know, a major transformation, you know, that resulted in significantly less number of people. So in some sense, we know that this needs to be done, but I think there is still a certain amount of resistance and hesitance in, you know, both businesses and at individual level. And that's where I think a lot of education, you know, commitment, you know, from companies, you know, to do this, and also technologies like, you know, from companies like Schneider that enable this transition.
And at places like Schneider, how are you kind of taking that message to the younger people to get them to understand the transition, the need for the transition? Because, you know, depending upon how far back you go into schools and universities, these are the people who are you going to be your customers, your partners, your employees, who will either work with you or will actually be the people who resist it.
I hope the last one is not the case, you know, the resisting this. So the way we work is we have a number of initiatives, you know, from company, you know, through Schneider Electric Foundation, in various parts of the world that we connect with, whether it is, working with, schools, colleges, or, communities, that require, special assistance. And we work very closely through universities in particular, where we draw lots of, new employees. In France, we have strong partnerships with, High Paris, Ecole Polytechnique, where we interact very closely. And we organized very recently a hackathon at MIT on AI focusing on, climate and sustainability, right? A lot of partnerships. And, one of the interesting things, Prashant, is when, we were hiring lots of people, one of the messages was, hey, you can, work in AI, which is, the hottest of technology. And by the way, you can apply AI to either, selling more advertisements, in other companies, or you can use it to solve some of the biggest challenges that, we have. And I see that, especially in young people who are considering these careers, this message resonates. They see the problem. And, going back to our, earlier discussion, that this is a future that they are all going to inherit. So in some sense, there is a significant stake, for them to, play a role.
Yeah. And related to your point, you talked about the foundation engaging with schools and universities. I have a slightly different view. I feel, and I'm being deliberate here, that foundations are required, I think, to make the impact more equitable. But it is also important for the business leaders like you to engage, right? Or for the business to engage, not the foundations.
This episode is brought to you by Lumi.network. We're on a mission to help the next generation prepare to take on the world. Our AI-augmented platform runs quests that help 10 to 25-year-olds shape their future by developing AI, entrepreneurship, and design thinking skills to solve the most pressing business and social issues. If you or your organization wants to impact the next generation positively, we'd love to talk to you. To learn more, visit lumi.network.
You are someone.
So I think, it is a combination of both, right? You need something like a foundation and an organization if you want to be systematic and if you want to, do certain things at scale, right? And then there is, a need to engage at individual level, whether it is, employee or a leader in a company, to, have an outreach in the community or, be present in. So it is not a a big entity like a foundation, but it is also there is a person behind it, a person who really feels passionate about this, you know, who can go and talk and, share the message and inspire people. So it's a combination of both, because I think you need a structure and formalism of an organization to do things at scale, but you also need individuals who engage.
That's a good example of the business going and actually interacting with it, because the business is thinking about solving problems that it actually wants answers to, right?
Yeah.
There is another part to it, which is going to an MIT is great, but what about going to Osmania University?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Or even that is actually a well-established university. What about going to schools? What about going to, you know, to different parts of the world, etc. So there is also that aspect, because the problem we are dealing with here is truly global.
Yeah. So, you know, you're absolutely right in that. I live in a place where people are quite interested in solving, the climate problems. I mean, MIT is no stranger to those people. And, we have several other institutes that I interact with, like Greentown Labs, etc. But I think your point about how can we go to the next level and the next level and the next level to, spread this message, it is key. And one thing that I think has changed a bit compared to what I would say as, 40 years, going back to when I grew up and what my motivation was, I think the students at Osmania University or the students at, other places are now as aware as, people that are studying at MIT in knowing the, the scope of the problem, the scale of the problem, and the impact it will have. I think that is what has changed in the last 40 years to bring this level of awareness, I think, which is the first step. Then there is the question of resources and the education that is needed to empower them. But I'm very happy to see that, there is, in fact, a net positive impact in all of this.
So let's move into the future.
Yeah.
And the question that I ask all of my guests is, if you fast forward to 2040, it's not too far away, but not too close. What is your prediction about both AI and sustainability? Where is the world at that point?
So 2040, given the pace at which, I'm just being a bit quick here that, given the pace at which I cannot even imagine what will happen in 2030, the pace of changes that are happening. I am a really strong techno-optimist. Okay. I think, technology is, not because I'm an engineer and I work in technology, but I think this has been really at the core of who I am. I believe that in, past century and a half, it has been a net positive for the society. The kind of quality of living that you and I enjoy today and rest of the world would not be possible without that. Now, was it always equitable? Was it always easy? It was not. But I think if you look at the long trajectory, it is. So I think when I see the technology such as thing, there is a significant upside that we start to see. Yes, it is, It is concerning that, all the white collar jobs might be impacted, software engineering, which once was the realm of, highly skilled people can be taken over by, ChatGPT that can write code, right? All of a sudden, the highly skilled people in computer software, they are also threatened by AI. And I think it is, it is going to impact. There is going to be a transition period, but in the end, what we will see is that we are going to be able to see such an improvement in the productivity and impact in the overall quality of life that we will have these, the quote-unquote magical technologies be part of each and, everyday life. I'm reminded of a book I read almost 10 years ago or so by a person from the MIT Media Lab. Okay, the title was called Enchanted Objects. Okay, that kind of stuck with me. I think we are getting into the realm of everything around us being a bit enchanted, you know, with, you know, sprinkle of, you know, AI dust. So, and I think it's going to be interesting. We will start to see, you know, technology and AI blend into our day-to-day life and make it much richer.
So that's really positive. And how do you think we can involve the young people?
You know, I actually think that the biggest impediment for this is not, you know, youth, but adults. You know, by what I mean by that is, you know, when ChatGPT came, or, you know, when generative AI is becoming part and parcel of, you know, students' life, the people who were worried were not young, you know, youngsters who were going to use that tool. I mean, my kids use, you know, the generative AI tools, and I encourage them to. I say this is something that you should be good at. This is going to be part and parcel of your life. It is the adults who are afraid that, oh, this is going to result into people taking the easy path, their creative thinking abilities will come down, etc. So it's actually adults, you know, really taking a step back and, you know, understanding how they can empower them. But, you know, for youth, you know, this generation, in my mind, is so much at ease with, you know, technology and adopting that. Of course, there is the notion of being responsible and, you know, being aware of the pitfalls, that don't believe everything, you know, that is shiny, that, you know, looks good. You have to understand the, you know, realities. But I think, you know, most places it is really, you know, adults taking a step back and providing proper guardrails.
Well, it's been great talking to you, Sridhar. It's always refreshing to talk to optimists. Because sometimes when you are right in it, the energy transition, the AI impact on technology, you know, on work, etc., and you can kind of become a little bit cynical. So I feel quite encouraged that, you know, people like you feel optimistic about the future. And I think that's a great message to send to the young people. Thank you very much. It was great to have you here.
Yeah, appreciate it, Prashant. Great conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you found this conversation valuable, please leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have a story or someone you know does, please recommend them to us by email at hello@lumi.network. We'll see you next time on In Youth, We Trust.